Oh, hello, hello, hello. I'm glad that we're back together again. Hope you had some time to rest and take it easy over the weekend. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we opened up with Jackie McLean and his quintet with Hypnosis. McLean, of course, is on alto sax, Kenny Dorm on trumpet, Sonny Clark on piano, Butch Warren on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. This is Lead Stories, as you know. I'm Eutrice Lead. And two important things we're going to talk about today, so let's get to the first one first. Prosecutors in the federal hate crime case of the killing of Ahmaud Arbery filed notices just yesterday that they have made plea deals with two of the three men, the father and son, Gregory and Travis McMichael, charged in Arbery's February the 23rd, 2020 shooting death. William Roddy Bryan, the third member of the posse that chased Arbery and cornered him as he jogged through their neighborhood outside of Brunswick, Georgia, was not included in the plea deal, which Arbery's parents, Wanda Cooper Jones and Marcus Arbery, said they are, quote, vehemently, unquote, against. What is your initial reaction to the purported plea deals? What questions do these deals raise in your mind? 888-874-4888. We thought we had a determination of justice here, where the three men were found guilty. One, that is the one who did not shoot, Roddy Bryan, was not convicted of murder, but certainly the father and son, Travis McMichael and his son, Gregory McMichael and his son Travis, were found guilty and charged accordingly on the basis of their conviction. Now, this is a very interesting development, and you will tell us why. Why is it significant that two of the three, the father and the son, have been able to work out a plea deal, the details of which we do not know yet, but a deal, they call it a deal for a reason. It means people are getting away with something they didn't expect to get away with. What are your thoughts about that? What could possibly have caused that to happen? 888-874-4888. Do you agree with a plea deal at this point? They were already convicted, all three of them. And now we learn yesterday that the father and the son, the Travises, have successfully worked out a plea deal, the details of which we do not know all there is to know. 888-874-4888. You should be on this like white on rice. You should know what you have to say. 888-874-4888. What could possibly have influenced this so-called plea deal? And does it, after a trial by a jury in front of a judge in a courtroom, and a determination is made as to innocence and guilt, and they were determined to be guilty of the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. How do we end up with a plea deal yesterday? Any thoughts about that? How could that possibly have happened? And the fact that it has happened now means what? What's the next move that should be made? Aubrey's parents are completely against this deal that was struck. Again, we don't know the fine details of it. But it does seem highly irregular, doesn't it? But in some parts of this country, it is perfectly regular, very, very acceptable, and quite legal. People sit down, they have a little talk, they come to an arrangement. Yes, there are people who will be worried, bothered by the fact that these are killers. Who sits down after they've been convicted of murder and work out a deal? That is bizarre. Muhammad from New York, you start us off today. Muhammad from New York, you're there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. So tell us what your thinking is about this deal, about which we don't know the fine details of.
Okay, I'll tell you what that is, and I know this from my own personal experience. When you've been found guilty of a crime, and then you charged with another part of that crime in another jurisdiction, if you challenge them and you know you're guilty, and them courts have found you guilty, you're having those prosecutors spend a lot of money and a lot of time when you already know you're guilty. So this is what they do. They'll say, you go ahead and plead guilty, and we'll run your sentences as not consecutive, but to go along with the same one. Concurrent, right, concurrent, thank you. Now, if you challenge them, they're going to make them consecutive. And they already have the goods on them, and they know it. So it's no point in challenging them when you've already been found guilty. It's shown on film, so it's no way. So what they're going to do, they're going to run those sentences concurrent with what they are, the time they're already doing it. And that's why they pleaded guilty.
All right. Well, thank you, but I don't know if I agree.
Well, I'm going to say this, having been involved with the legal system, the jurisdiction, we go through that all the time. So we know what that is, and it wasn't involved. Now, if you're looking at it from a layman's position, you probably wouldn't understand. But if you've been through that process, you know exactly what's going on. And you see it hundreds of times over. Anyone who's been through that system or been incarcerated or work with people have been incarcerated, you know that. No question about it. Thank you.
So who is going to tell us immediately what is the first question that comes to your mind? Should this go down very calmly, people being very rational about this, or is there a need, a demand to raise some particular questions? And if so, can you think of the questions that should be asked at this point? 888-874-4888. All right, I'm waiting for your call. Y'all are slow. You got to be faster than this. What has happened here? What in your mind tells you has happened here? And what should be done about it now, immediately? I just repeat, We saw the film. We saw the footage. Ahmaud Arbery is just going for a jog, as he regularly did. He's jogging through a neighborhood. He is then chased down by three white men, including a father and a son and their neighbor, the guy who is doing the filming. They corner him and block him from escaping with their vehicles. He realizes, this is Ahmaud, he realizes that he is in a very bad position. And he couldn't deny it when they produced a shotgun, meaning this was going to be the meaning of their encounter. They were going to kill him. He tried to wrestle the gun away. And at that point, he was shot in the chest. A big hole is in his chest. He falls and he dies. The trial comes up and we're hearing all kinds of things except what is the charge? The charge was that he was killed, yes, but it was also categorized as a hate crime, and that's a special category of crime. It carries special punishment. And now, even after a trial, an open trial, it is not a secret trial, this is an open trial before a jury, before a judge. We learned that yesterday there was, in effect, an agreement between parties, not involving the parties who heard this case, but the parties who appeared before the court. And the agreement is that they get to basically revise the outcome of the trial. What are your thoughts? Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, Chief, how are you doing with
us? Okay, Ed, how are you doing?
I'm here. The actions were premeditated. That a human being was murdered by these actions. And there should be no quarter. There should be no out. No pre-bargaining. No accommodation. They should receive the maximum penalty under the law, whatever that is. There's no deal.
Where would you, if you were assigned to investigate this case, where would you start?
Well, I would start with the district attorney's office. I would start with the prosecution and the county. There were several.
Thank you. Why would you start there?
Because there were several discrepancies from the beginning with this case. One district attorney had to recuse themselves. There were compromises in the beginning. There were deals given, and even actions during the trial struck me as odd, if not illegal, or judicial privileges taken, biases showing. These men were given every opportunity to have a mistrial, and the judge would seem to be working for the prosecuting part of the town. So the whole thing stinks like a fish. It stinks from the head down.
Okay, what's a glaring fact here? You're close. You're very, 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 very close.
Well, to me, a glaring fact is you didn't offer any guys a deal. I mean, how dare you? You know, you don't talk to the family. You don't talk to, you don't go with the prevailing sentiment. You don't even go with the guilty verdict. These guys don't deserve it. They don't deserve it. I mean, to me, that's just glaring. How dare you offer them anything?
How dare you even countenance the approach? How dare you come to me after you've been convicted by a jury, and now you want to talk about revising basically the outcome of the trial.
There's no reason.
Right on the head right there. This is the main thing. And there's a reason. What do you think the reason is? Or might be?
Well, I mean, racism. White racism, white privilege. This country's full of it. Even when glaringly you're guilty, you still get the opportunity to have some type of opt-out, some type of compassion for a compassionless act. It's hideous, but it's America.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing us right at the center of this issue. Thanks so much. 888-874-4888. What is the question here that is still outstanding, has not been answered, and deserves a federal inquiry, a major inquiry? Can you think of it? Ed had the answer, but he didn't get the major part of it. He got everything else, but he didn't get the major part of it. What do you think the major part is? Oh, look at them being so quiet. They're scared. They're afraid to call in. No, don't be afraid. Be very much involved, because very soon I'll have to answer the question myself. 888-874-4888. We covered it before the trial. I made a point of it. I pointed it out. Means you didn't pay attention. I know I look a little crazy, but I really am not. I pointed this out at the very start of the trial about a possible conflict of interest in this case. And lo and behold, it occurred. And now it is the very basis for an attempt to reverse the trial and reverse the outcome of the trial. But I said it. Patricia from New York, what do you see is the big point here?
Good afternoon, Utrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family. I'm absolutely aghast because I don't listen, I don't follow, you know, normal news, so I'm just hearing about this for the very, very first time. I did not know. The first things that come to my mind is, number one, and this may just reflect my own ignorance, I was not aware that you could enter into a plea deal agreement after you have been sentenced. That's number one. I wasn't aware that that was possible. Number two, one of the charges was that this was charged as a hate crime. I'm not really quite certain if you can request to have your sentence adjudicated on a hate crime.
By the way, a federal hate crime.
Well, are most hate crimes federal crimes?
Yes, but this, I stress that because that's part of the answer.
My other concern is that the prosecutor had to entertain this request. I mean, all an attorney can do is make the request. It's up to the prosecutor to say yay or nay. The prosecutor entertained the request of the defense. Again, very alarming.
But why? Why do you think that happened?
Well, clearly, you know, I think this is a rhetorical question that you're asking me, but clearly white people are never supposed to pay for the crimes against black people. Never. On any level.
Okay.
There were relationships that were already formed way before this happened, which was why it took so long for them to even be charged. These relationships clearly run very deep. So there are many, I'm waiting now for the federal government to get involved. I'm waiting for
We shall see. But you're right. You're standing right on the dot. But I need to be a little bit more definitive.
I'm waiting for the Justice Department to get involved. I'm waiting for Biden to tell his that this must be investigated as a hate crime and they must be prosecuted as a hate crime since the local authorities failed to do this.
Okay. Well, you were right there. You're right there. I think if I had to award the prize today, it would go to you so far. I have one more call, and then we'll decide whether you get the prize. Positive from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
This is strictly for recall. And I'm thinking it's dealing with a conflict of interest in regards to the representation of the father and son's defense.
Yes.
Having the same attorneys. I think you said something like that, because I'm just trying to recall something you said that was key. One of your arguments, one of your points you made in the beginning of this, initially. Okay, all right. I was just strictly trying to recall your point, not my own.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
David from...
Thank you.
All right. We're back together again. It's very nice. It was a short interruption. But these things happen, and we just have to cope with them. Neil from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Interruption.
Hello?
And you just have to cope with them.
Neil from
Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hello? I'm here.
Okay, please turn your radio off so we're not getting the feedback.
Yes. Done.
Okay. Great.
I don't expect you to say you hit the nail on the head, Neil, or give the man a cigar, but I think there's a very important element that I don't think anyone's mentioned yet. I do have some. Okay, I'll... The perpetrators are not men of means. What that means to me is there must be some very, very serious money involved here in terms of their legal backing. And I think that part of the investigation should reveal exactly what sources. I don't think anything's going to happen from this moment on without a lot of money being put on the table.
Well, you know, you're right in the middle of formulating a conspiracy theory, so we can't go forward with what you're thinking. I'm asking, what do you think happened here?
Serious abrogation of justice, even though you pointed out that it's legal in many states to do this. It's totally counter-logical. The only way it makes sense.
Yes, but it makes perfect
involved.
Sense because it maintains again a clean slate for the prosecutor and for the people who worked with the prosecutor in one case for 24 years. That should count for something. And I think it should count for a very intensive investigation. because that is not normal, and it shouldn't be accepted as such.
Okay, but you're saying that this is a modus that's been in place for a long time, suggesting.
Well, it is logical. It is logical. The father of Travis, this is Gregory Michael McMichael, has worked in the DA's office for 24 years. He's built up a lot of goodwill and was able, it seems to me, to put in place some kind of arrangement where he simply would not end up spending the rest of his life in a state prison where he knows he would not last too long.
Well, I'll give
you the cigar. So he would do some time in a federal prison, which is a lot easier to bear, and then after a certain time make an application to the court. He would have been able to show that he was an exemplary inmate. He behaved himself. He didn't cause any trouble, and should be entitled to early release.
Okay, so the mechanisms are in place.
Sure.
But please don't overlook what I suggested, and I only suggested it with absolutely no proof. But men of no means can have connections. I agree with you there. I agree with you that they're doing everything they possibly can to mitigate the situation, which looked like a slam dunk to me and the average person. That's that, but it isn't. So you're bringing something to the surface that really should be focused on very heavily by a federal agency, the Justice Department. And what I'm saying, along with that, always lurking, are those anonymous donors who are willing to use their monetary leverage in any way they can to help. And I think that should be part of the investigation, is who all may or may not be supporting him financially.
I don't disagree. But you did present it as if you know those to be the facts.
Well, I've been around the block a few times, and I know that money is quite a lubricant. And I know that it's all about the Benjamins. You've heard that expression.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for participating and contributing today. 888-874-4888. We have our connection back with the studio, and we're in fine shape. What do you think about what we have laid out here today? Does it suggest the need for an immediate and deep investigation on the grounds that I've talked about? What do you think? David from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace. Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
Yes. Hi, Trace. My feeling is I don't really think anything nefarious is going on. Just explain why. In the state trial, the McMichaels are going to be sentenced to life. And other than a motion for a new trial, appeal, they're facing life. In the federal trial, the charges that have to be proved are much higher and extremely difficult. I would like to believe that the federal government, that the Department of Justice, is hopefully getting the best deal they can, because they, if they decide to go to trial, the outcome could not be very favorable to the government. And as I understand, the plea offer, which, by the way, the details of it, as far as I know, the specifics of it have not been publicized yet, it starts out at 30 years in federal prison up from there. The first 30 years in federal prison, and what Lee Merriweather, the family attorney for the is saying that this is not fair, because if this deal goes through and the McMichaels are allowed to in federal prison.
Oh, I'm sorry, we're losing quite a bit of what you're saying. The phone line is not as steady as it ought to be.
Okay, can you hear me now? Or
yes, I can hear you, but there's a lot of interference that is cutting out portions of what you are saying. But we'll press forward. Go ahead.
Thank you, Yatrice. So what Lee Merriweather, the family attorney for the Ahmaud Arbery Auris family, is saying that this looks fishy, because the first 30 years, if the agreement is that these defendants will spend federal prison rather than in state prison, that's a much easier punishment than state prison. But not only that, this deal is not consummated yet. It has to be approved by the federal district court judge. And I choose to believe that the Department of Justice, believe me, they want a conviction. This is my feeling. And I don't think a federal district court judge, this is a way often to get beyond the politics of what goes on in the state when you're in federal court. So, I mean, I guess we'll have to see. But I think when I first read about the plea offer and the plea deal, I didn't like it. I really didn't like it. But I say wait and see. Let's see what the details are and whether the federal district court judge even approves it. But right now, the McMichaels are going to be spending life in prison.
That is too early to call. They're not going to be spending life in prison. You can be sure of that.
Why do you say that?
24 years working in the DA's office, the very one that he's hoping would redeem him now, and he has built up, in his view, he's had a lot of goodwill to capitalize on, and he has plans. His plans would be to demonstrate that he's been a model prisoner, and he's not the guy that we saw on the film, on the tape. He's not that guy at all. He's older. He's got an entirely different view of life, blah, 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 blah. Okay. And they'll give him time off for time served. He's not going to serve 30 years. Now, his son, being much younger, might be called upon to serve 30 years, but not the father. He's not going to serve 30 years.
I watched most of the state trial. And by the way, to me, I think one of the good things about this whole trial, this is in a southern Georgia court with a almost complete white jury. So I'm happy about the results of the verdicts, but as it stands right now, now sentencing will be in on the case will be, I think, in March or April, something like that.
April, yes.
Father and the son is life. That's what it is. I mean, when you talk about he could get out.
Yeah, but they already had voted them for the jury had already voted, didn't it, that they should basically serve pretty much close to life in prison. Look what happened. There's no life sentence here.
Yeah, but
there are all kinds of ways to get around it. And right, the father is calling in his chips, and he's saying, look, you know me, I've been around you. I've been working in your office for 24 years. I know all the cops. I know everybody. This is when I need you to step to the plate and, you know, help me out.
The jury does. And after they are sentenced, Eutrice, I would like to call you back and happily say to you that these guys are going to be in prison for life, including Father. I'm very confident of that.
Okay. You're on. I'm expecting that call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling in today. Okay, I'm still hearing, you know, the choppiness of our phone line. It is not working the way it ought to work. But you have to just stick things through sometimes when life gets a little difficult. So by tomorrow, let me ask now, are we going to be in good shape by tomorrow? Perfect shape. Yes, we will. So I would stick with that. And you never know. It's like anything else. It's electronic stuff, and it's sometimes quite, what's the word I'm looking for, kind of sensitive, and it just behaves unpredictably. I mean, we can't get out of joint about it. You just have to say, oh, well, it's starting to act up, and we will hang in there until it starts to calm down again, and we'll fix it. So I thank you very much for calling in. But you see, this also is a lesson. Sometimes I say things, and people just don't pay attention. But there is something behind what I'm saying. I've seen these kinds of things happen before. This is not new. It is not novel. It is not unique to this case. But it was apparent enough for me to point to it and say, this is a problem. This is a problem right here. How are you going to have, and in the Aubrey case, again, you had so many unusual things that seemed to be contradictory, and they didn't take the time and the effort to clear them out so that there's no doubt. Nothing clouds the vision. Nothing clouds the mind of the jury or the public. This is very important in many, many cases, especially where so much is resting on the outcome. You have to be absolutely circumspect. You give no leeway for anybody to make a point that would contradict where it is you going as a prosecutor with your case. But we saw it. We saw it happening. And we knew it was going to be a problem. And here it is. Here's the problem. And it's really something you could have spotted a long time ago and corrected. There was time to correct it, but they didn't seize their time. Thanks so much for listening. And let's get together again tomorrow, do some more talking. And thank you, folks in the studio who have been scampering to get us all patched up so that at least we can hear something from each other today in an exchange. Thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.